taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans. I'm glad you could join me here at the Constitution Study. We read, we study the Constitution, we teach the rising generation to be free. And if there's one freedom that is often misunderstood and misapplied, it's this concept of property rights. So I want to talk to you today. We're going to talk a bit about property rights. We're going to start with a Supreme Court case out of California. We're going to talk a little bit about good old James Madison and his opinion on property. And then we'll take a look at some recent news and Supreme Court cases and other court cases that deal with the concept of property. So let's kick off with a case out of California involving a taking.
Earlier this year, I wrote, "A taking or not a taking? That is a question." It was about the oral arguments in the case Cedar Point Nursery versus Hasid. Since the Supreme Court has rendered its opinion, now is a time for review. If you've ever read any of my case reviews, you probably won't be surprised that the court came to the right answer, but for the wrong reasons. As I pointed out in my previous article, what California was doing with their regulation isn't so much a taking as a deprivation of property. From the Cedar Point opinion, quote, "A California regulation grants labor organizations a right to take access to an agricultural employee's property in order to solicit support for unionization." Cedar Point Nursery and Fowler Packing Company both filed suit claiming that California's law represented an uncompensated easement to enter their property and therefore constituted a taking under the 5th and 14th Amendments. Now, this was denied by both the district and circuit courts, leading to the appeal to the Supreme Court, which found for the growers. From the opinion, quote, "The grower's complaint states a claim for an uncompensated taking in violation of the 5th and 14th Amendments. 1. The takings clause of the 5th Amendment, applicable to the states through the 14th Amendment, provides nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation." Let's start with the takings clause. As the court quoted, the 5th Amendment clearly states, quote, "nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation." Now, this cannot be a taking under the 5th Amendment because property wasn't taken for public use. The law specifically granted an easement to a limited list of private organizations, specifically labor unions. Quote, "The regulation mandates that agricultural employers allow union organizers onto their property for up to 3 hours per day, 120 days per year." Now, since the property wasn't taken, it still remains the property of the growers. And since the regulation did not designate it for public use, this is not a Fifth Amendment taking. And this nonsense that somehow the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution didn't apply to the states until the 14th Amendment, well, it's just another example of the incredibly flawed incorporation doctrine, which I debunk in my article titled "The Incorporation Doctrine." You can find that on the website, constitutionstudy.com. Now, while the court doesn't seem to recognize it, what we have here, in their own words, is not a taking, but a deprivation of property without due process. As was stated in the opinion, quote, "A different standard applies when the government, rather than appropriating private property for itself or a third party, instead imposes regulations restricting an owner's ability to use his own property." The court is correct. A different standard applies when governments take control of property, especially for third parties. That makes this a clear violation of the 14th Amendment, not because of some invented incorporation doctrine, but because it's the state depriving the growers of the enjoyment of their property, not as punishment for the growers' wrongdoing, but for the advantage of an ally to the Democratic Party, which controls the government in California. The 14th Amendment states, quote, "Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." The court even used a previous opinion in Kaiser Aetna versus United States as evidence that denying the growers the right to exclude is to deny them a fundamental element of private property. Quote, The right to exclude is a fundamental element of the property right, according to Kaiser Aetna versus United States. The court declines to adopt the theory that the access regulation merely regulates and does not appropriate the grower's right to exclude. The right to exclude is not an empty formality that can be modified at the government's pleasure. Now, if that were all, I probably wouldn't have done an entire video on the subject. But then the court asked what to me is a very interesting question. Quote, "The board's fear that treating the access regulation as a per se physical taking will endanger a host of state and federal government activities involving entry onto private property is unfounded. One of the concerns that California's Agricultural Labor Relations Board brought up was the concern that finding their regulation a taking would impact other state and federal activities. The court says these concerns are unfounded. I, on the other hand, find them quite compelling." Quote, first, the court's holding does nothing to efface the distinction between trespass and takings. The court's precedent made clear that the isolated physical violations not undertaken pursuant to a granted right of access are properly assessed as individual torts rather than appropriation of a property right. The court is correct. There is a simple distinction between trespass and takings, and I've seen nothing in this opinion that would change that. Quote, second, many government-authorized physical invasions will not amount to takings because they are consistent with longstanding background restrictions on property rights, including traditional common law privileges to access private property. Here's the rub. See, if the government unilaterally granting an easement, a physical invasion onto private property, is a taking under Cedar Point Nursery, why is it not under other regulations? Now, I'm sure most Americans would find it distasteful for businesses to deny access to people for reasons we don't agree with. However, part of living in a free country is allowing people to do and say things we find distasteful until they cause someone actual harm. So if the government cannot grant labor unions access to agricultural businesses, why can it grant access based on race, sex, or physical disability? Why did the same court that said the state of California could not infringe on the right to exclude against labor unions deny to hear a case that let standard opinion that schools could grant boys access to the girls' bathroom and locker rooms? I'll be covering the case of Grimm versus Gloucester County School Board in an upcoming video. And what about those regulations granting government actors access to private property without a warrant? If the government demands that you obtain their permission, then requires you to give up the right to exclude as part of that process, is that not a deprivation of property? If governments cannot grant access to third parties, how can they grant it to themselves? Especially when such access is a direct violation of the supreme law of the land. The answer to these questions is quite clear. The court has assumed the authority to apply the law based solely on their own opinion and nothing else. Interestingly enough, the dissent pointed out the flaw in the plaintiff's claim that California's regulation is a taking. Quote, "Does the regulation physically appropriate the employer's property? If so, there is no need to look further. The government must pay the employer's just compensation." I agree. The question of a taking has to do with actual taking of property. From Webster's 1828 dictionary, quote, "Taking, noun, the act of gaining possession, a seizing, seizure, or apprehension." Since the California regulation did not gain possession of the property, does that mean the dissent was correct and the court should have found for the state of California? Again, this cannot be a taking because nothing was taken. As Justice Breyer points out, quote, "The court holds that the provision access to organizers requirement amounts to a physical appropriation of property. In its view, virtually every government authorized invasion is an appropriation. This regulation does not appropriate anything. It regulates the employer's right to exclude others." As I've already said, and the court has noted previously, granting access to private property is a deprivation of property. So where in the Constitution of California or the United States is government given the authority to regulate property? The answer is nowhere. Again, from Webster's 1828 dictionary, quote, "regulate, a transitive verb, to subject to rules or restrictions." Since the power to regulate is the power to restrict, is it not also the power to deprive? Quote, Deprive is a transitive verb, to hinder from possessing or enjoying. Therefore, when government regulates property, placing restrictions upon your use of it, they are hindering you from possessing and enjoying it. So whenever any government regulates your property without due process, they are depriving you of it in violation of the Constitution of the United States. Now, the Free Legal Dictionary defines due process as, quote, an established course of judicial proceedings or other governmental activities designed to safeguard the legal rights of the individual. That means all the arguments of the court, both in favor and dissent, about the temporary or limited nature of the regulation are moot. The Constitution of the United States, the supreme law of the land, specifically prohibits governments from depriving you of your property without following due process and ensuring your rights as an individual are protected. So once again, we have a federal court offering the right conclusion for a very wrong reason. Like the bitter medicine hidden in candy, this case is not the vindication of property rights many seem to be touting. Instead, it's another nail in the coffin of the rule of law. As one more court places itself above the law they have sworn to uphold, America ceases to be a republic and moves ever closer to an oligarchy that closely resembles a tyrant we declared independence from back in 1776.
Probably one of the most interesting things I've learned through my study of the Constitution and many of the writings of our founding fathers is the idea of property. We have a rather anemic idea of property nowadays. In fact, I recommend everybody read an essay from James Madison on property. In fact, it's titled Property. You can find it at founders.archives.gov. He wrote this in March of 1792, and he starts, property. This term in its particular application means that dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world, and exclusion of every other individual. In its larger and juster meaning, it embraces everything to which a man may attach a value and have a right, and which leaves to everyone else the like advantage. In the former sense, a man's land or merchandise or money is called his property. In the latter sense, a man has a property in his opinions and the free communication of them. He has a property in peculiar value in his religious opinions and in the profession of the practice dictated by them. He has a property very dear to him in the safety and liberty of his person. He has an equal property in the free use of his faculties and free choice of the objects on which to employ them. In a word, a man is said to have a right to his property. He may be equally said to have a property in his rights. This is the property when the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendment says you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. It's more than what most people think. So when we take a look at this California case, which involves the state determining whether or not you have control of property, if the state can deprive you of control of property, they've deprived you of the property. The same could be said for vaccine mandates. If the state requires you, deprives you of the control of your body, they've deprived you of property, not just liberty, property. So these ideas of property and revolve around control. Who has control? Now, again, I agree the court was correct when it found that the California law was unconstitutional, but A, it was not a taking since nothing was taken, but the idea still remains that government has the right to regulate your property without due process. That is wrong. That is false. That is an assumption of power and a violation not only of the Constitution of the United States, but of most of our states as well. So it's another one of those was kind of good news, bad news things from that standpoint. Now, if we understand property to be more than simply the land we live on or the stuff we own, but it's the stuff we have control and stuff we have interest in. Well, that brings up a couple of interesting thoughts as I was looking through some of these recent news articles. For example, you may have heard that Representative Nadler has announced he wants to probe the Department of Justice's recent data seizure from lawmakers and journalists. Now, first of all, I find this kind of a I don't know, a pale outrage. I mean, Mr. Nadler and others didn't seem to have a problem when it was the president who had data seized by the DOJ, when his communication was intercepted, or when it was a Fox News reporter, a journalist, who had his data seized. They didn't worry about that. But you see, now that it's Democrat-leaning lawmakers and journalists, well, now a Democratic leader is all bent out of shape. It's just one more proof that, you know, how can you tell when a politician is lying? Well, their lips are moving, and a pox on both their houses. This is nothing but grandstanding. This is nothing but show. There is no, I personally, again, data is property. And to seize it without a warrant is a violation of due process. Therefore, it's illegal. But I really wish, you know, I believe Mr. Nadler, if he did this when James Rosen of Fox News was spied on by a Democratic administration, I'd be even a little more interested if he was seemed to be so worried that a Democratic administration appears to be spying on Tucker Carlson, another Fox News anchor. No, this is another partisan hack because the government doesn't believe in property and doesn't believe in rights. It believes in power and its ability to exercise power. And I found this other interesting article. The Ohio legislature passed a bill to ban COVID-19 vaccine mandates at schools and universities. I've reported on this before. I've talked about this before. We have many, many schools and universities, including public schools and universities, that are demanding control over the property you have in your body in order to attend them. And again, if this is a private school, they have every right to control who gains access to the school, the right to exclude. Public schools, on the other hand, they have no such right. They are owned by the public. They are owned by the people, and they are bound to protect them and their rights. So I like the fact that the Ohio legislature said, listen, and again, I haven't read all the details of the bill. I don't know if they apply it simply to private schools or if they expand it to or if they limit it to public schools, they expand it to private schools. But here's the other thing I want you to notice. See, this bill only takes effect, it only has meaning until the FDA approves the vaccine. See, even when the state is protecting your rights, they're not really protecting their rights. They're protecting you from an experimental vaccine. But you see, once the FDA, once the government has blessed this officially, well, they believe it's more than right for government to mandate that you not exclude vaccines from your body. Isn't that interesting? Government says that you can exclude vaccines from your body until the government approves them, until another government approves. Then you have no choice. See, so much of what we argue about in many ways, not simply property rights, but it does include property rights and includes the property you have in your own body. And again, it's not always property. It's not only your body. There's a story that came out of Tennessee. Tennessee has a law that took place on July 1st that basically requires signage if a business has transgender bathrooms. The law states that any business that allow both biological sexes to use the same bathroom must post a sign that says, quote, notice, this facility maintains a policy of allowing the use of restrooms by either biological sex, regardless of the designation on the restroom. And there are people in Nashville that are all bent out of shape of it. In fact, the Nashville DA has refused to prosecute or even enforce these rules. And he said, quote, I believe every person is welcome and valued in Nashville. Enforcement of transphobic or homophobic law is contrary to those values. My office will not promote hate crime. Well, I'm sorry, not promote hate. Well, Mr. Funk, who happens to be the DA in Nashville, what about those who hate people who aren't transgender. Again, I'm loath to have government involved in businesses and their property. I am. I am loath to it. But as a consumer, I want to know if I walk into a business that if my daughter walks into the bathroom, a guy might walk in behind her. That's not hateful. That's common sense. That's being protective of my daughter, which, by the way, is my job as her father. Doesn't matter that she's over 18. I still have a duty to do what I can to protect her. The same with my wife. If, you know, I want to know, hey, this might happen. I have less issue with the law than with those who are so bent on making this seem normal that they will trash the rights and sensibilities of 99% of the population in order to promote people with a mental disorder. Again, I don't have anything against them. I don't even have a problem with a business saying, hey, you know, yes, we will let we'll let people use whatever bathroom they want. I'm just saying, what is wrong with saying, letting people know? Now, the sad part is, if we lived in a decent world, we wouldn't need a law to do this. You wouldn't need a law to put up a sign to warn people that a single-sex bathroom is not a single-sex bathroom. I mean, that's basically what they're saying. They refer to it as gender. The problem is sex. You've got male, you have female. You have men, you have women. If you're allowing women in the men's room, that's no longer a single-sex bathroom. If you're allowing men in the women's room, that's no longer a single-sex bathroom. So if you put up a sign that says men and you allow men and women, isn't that false advertising? Just thinking out loud. But again, if we lived in a decent society and a business wanted to allow people to use whatever bathroom they'd want, they'd let you know. They'd put a sign up that says all gender bathroom. They might put a sign up that says predominantly male bathroom or predominantly female bathroom. They wouldn't lie to you. The very idea that the state of Tennessee figured they had to make this law is because we don't live in a decent society. We don't live in a civil society anymore. The concept of consideration of others is gone. So this one to me is a bit of a conundrum, because on the one hand, you've got the property rights of the business owners being told that they must speak a certain way, which I don't like. But on the other hand, you have the property right of the customer that walks in, sees a single-sex bathroom, expects it to be a single-sex bathroom, and finds out it's not. Well, what then? Maybe what they need is they need to petition the government and sue for false advertising. You know, if I walk into a restaurant or a store and I walk into a men's room, right? They're telling me this is a restroom for men. If I see a woman in there, they've lied to me. Maybe that's the answer. But it's this understanding of, we have to have a better understanding of property, because not only because it without it, governments run out of control. But without it, how do we have a rational discussion about how to deal with controversial issues that doesn't devolve into this is what I want and this is what you want, and rather than looking and going, what is the property rights of all those involved? What right does a customer have when they walk into a single-sex restroom to expect it to be a single-sex restroom? Maybe the term right, what about an expectation? You know, if you put a sign up that says men, is that a tacit agreement that this is for men? Not women who think they're men, not women who are confused. And if you don't fulfill that, what responsibility does the business owner have for lying to its customers? These are the types of things I think about. I know a lot of people think I'm strange. Let's face it, I think I'm strange sometimes, but this is the type of stuff I think about when I'm looking at these, topics, when I'm looking at these ideas. Now, before I head off to break, I want to remind you to head over to healthycell.com/outloud. Healthy Cell's reinvented the vitamin. It's no longer a pill. It's a gel, a travel-ready gel pack you take You can just take the pack or you can mix it in a drink. It's an easy way to get the vitamins and minerals you need to keep your body healthy at a cellular level, to boost your immune system. And one I want you to try is take a look at the REM sleep. Now, my wife has had problems sleeping our entire married life. Now, she tried the REM sleep product from Healthy Cell, and it worked very, very well. She was surprised how well it worked, not only to help her fall asleep, but to help her stay asleep. So if you have problems sleeping or you just want to look at other vitamin alternatives, well, head to healthycell.com/outloud. As an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your very first order. You can try the REM sleep, the immune super boost, the focus and recall. But again, try the REM sleep. If you have any problem sleeping, it's worked very well for my wife. It's worked very well for me. I know it'll work for you.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Today, America stands at the crossroads of history. Our actions will determine the fate of our nation. Well, that journey starts here and starts now. We invite you to join us in making the ultimate difference. Subscribe to our podcast and newsletters. Turn notifications on and stay in the know. You'll find all that back at AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution study. Today, we are talking about property and the concept that you not only have a right to property, but you have a property in your rights. That property is more than just stuff. It's access. It's control that really helped define property. We've talked about the recent Supreme Court case involving California's law allowing union activists onto private property, which the Supreme Court has declared unconstitutional for an extremely wrong reason. We also talk about the property you have in your data. You know, the Fourth Amendment talks about your houses, persons, papers, and effects, and we forget that, well, part of those effects are your data. What we used to call paper now is more often bytes in a computer, and understanding the right we have to that property. The right you have to the property of your body and the right you have to control your business. So I take a look at a couple of others. I found this interesting. This is going to sound a little odd. It's a little bit different, but I found this article about two people who were arrested at a school board meeting. Now, if you've followed the news, you probably have heard that critical race theory has gone crazy in Loudoun County, Virginia. I don't mean the CRT. CRT is going crazy a lot of places. But Loudoun, the people in Loudoun have really stood up. They have made a point of standing against the school indoctrinating their children with racism. Now, here's what's interesting. See, at a recent school board meeting, the school board shut down public comment. Now, I want you to stop for a second. The school board is for a public school. That school is owned by the people of that school district. They have a public comment period so that their owners, their masters, can comment on what they're doing. The school board didn't want to hear it, and they shut it down. Now, more than 250 people in the district signed up to speak during the comment period. about the use of pronouns, about transgender policies. Multiple residents on both sides of the debate spoke up during the comment period. This is good. This is free speech. This should be how a public entity listens to their owners. Again, because it's control. Now, here's where things get a little weird. See, after one commentator pointed out what was going on, the room cheered. It was blatantly obvious that the majority of the people that had showed up were really against the CRT and other racist teachings that are going on in the school district, which is owned. It is the property of the public. It is a property of the people. Yet the school board shut down the comment period, to which came jeers and boos. The people who work for the public decided they didn't want to hear from the public anymore. Then the sheriff's department showed up. Suddenly the sheriff's department declared this an unlawful assembly, and they began threatening attendees who did not leave with arrest. Now, I wasn't there. This is reports that I've seen about what's been going on, but I want you to recognize something very important. This is a public meeting. This is a public place. The Loudoun County Sheriff's Department has no legal authority to declare something an unlawful assembly. That is a violation of the Virginia Constitution. Notice I did not say the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution because Congress didn't make this law. However, Article 1, Section 12 of the Virginia Constitution says, quote, that the freedoms of speech and of the press are among the great bulwarks of liberty and can never be restrained except by despotic governments. That any citizen may freely speak, write, and publish his sentiments on all subjects, being responsible for the abuse of that right. That the General Assembly shall not pass any law abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, nor the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievance. So what do we have here? We have freedom of speech. We have the right to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievance, all of which are being denied by the school board, and now by the sheriff's department. Do you want to know why I say everyone should get to know their county sheriff? Because of stuff like this. Now, I have a couple of interesting points I want to make. Did anybody there point out to the sheriff's deputies that they were violating their oath to the Constitution of the state of Virginia? Was anyone there able to show them Article 1, Section 12 saying, we have a right to speak. This is a public assembly. We are being peaceful. We have not damaged anything. And we are petitioning our government for a redress of grievance. They are denying us this right. Why are you not arresting them? That's the question that should have been asked. The next thing that should have been noted is that by suddenly declaring this an unlawful assembly and threatening people with arrest, these sheriff's deputies also violated Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution of Virginia, which reads, quote, that all power is vested in and consequently derived from the people, that magistrates are their trustees and servants and at all times amenable to them. The sheriff's deputies aren't there to serve the school board. They are there to serve the people. And until any of those individuals broke the law, they had no right to arrest them. They have no authority to simply declare that a peaceable assembly is unlawful. So I want to ask the people of Loudoun County, Virginia, how many of you got badge numbers and how many of you are filing complaints for unlawful arrest, for violation of the Constitution of Virginia, for violation of the right to freely speak, to peaceably assemble, and to petition the government, because these deputies did wrong. The school board did wrong. The deputies did wrong. And I'm very curious what's going on in Loudoun, Virginia, because these are people standing up for their rights, and I wonder how far are they willing to take it. Are they willing to stand and say, no, you're the one breaking the law? And who knows? Maybe there's a lawyer in Virginia that knows whether or not it is a Virginia crime to deprive someone of a right protected by the Virginia Constitution under color of law. See, as James Madison said, these men and women have a property in their rights, and they need to defend them because apparently the Sheriff's Department in Loudoun County, Virginia, won't. They are complicit in the evil that's been going on there. They have shown themselves to be unworthy of that office. And I'm curious when that sheriff is up for election, when will that be and how will the people of that county react? Because I know they're mad at the school board. How many of them are now mad at the sheriff's department, recognizing they are the ones violating the law, and are they prepared to do something about it? So that, let's talk about a few court cases. There have been several recently, several other court cases that revolve around this idea of property rights. Again, coming out of California, this is a Supreme Court case, Lange versus California. And the basic premise here is what's called an exigent circumstance. If you're familiar with the Fourth Amendment, you may recognize it says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. So the question really is, what is reasonable? And in law, with the exception of our current tyrants in black robes, the general rule has been two things. One, was there a warrant? A warrant makes a search reasonable. If you can go to a judge and you can show probable cause supported by oath or affirmation that there's a reason to search or to seize, you can particularly describe the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized, then to the case that a judge says, yes, you have sufficient probable cause, that's considered a reasonable search. Now, the other type of search, of reasonable search, is called an exigent circumstance. An exigent generally means immediate. You know, we've all seen the law enforcement shows, right? The cop shows, and the cop comes up and knocks on the door, and no one's home. And one of them will say, do you smell smoke, or do you hear someone crying for help? The idea is if a government official sees smoke billowing out of your house, that's an exigent circumstance for them to enter and see if anyone's inside in danger. If they hear someone crying for help, or if they hear a fight going on, there's an exigent circumstance for them to come in and make sure that, that people are okay. Now, the other exigent circumstance is pursuit of a felon. So if law enforcement is in hot pursuit of a felon, and that felon enters your property, it's considered exigent circumstance for law enforcement to follow that property. Part of what was determined in Lange versus California was if they're in pursuit of a suspect of a misdemeanor, they can't always enter the home without a warrant. Now, the specifics of this case are interesting. Mr. Lange drove by a California Highway Patrol officer playing loud music and honking his horn. The officer began to follow Lange and soon after turned on his overhead lights to signal that Lange should pull over. Rather than stopping, Lange drove to his home. He wasn't far from home. He drove into his driveway and he entered his garage, at which point the officer followed Lange into his garage and began questioning him and observed signs of intoxication, and then went on to arrest him for driving under the influence. So the question was there an exigent circumstance for the officer to follow Lange onto his private property? And the answer was, well, no, this was at all that the officer knew at the time. The fact that Lange was intoxicated is immaterial. The officer didn't know that. All the officer knew is you had someone being loud and obnoxious, at best a misdemeanor. That did not give him the authority to enter that person's home. Your home is your castle. That is private property. So the court said, the court said there are instances where a misdemeanor, a pursuit of a suspect in a misdemeanor is sufficient. That was not one of them. So we have that. Next, we have a judge with dealing with, in this case, safe deposit. Do you have a safe deposit box? You know what? Everyone knows a safe deposit, right? You go somewhere and it's in a vault and you get your own little box. Well, apparently several customers of the U.S. private vaults received what the judge referred to as woefully vague seizure notices, saying that the government planned a forfeiture of the safe deposit boxes and everything that was in them. Now, it's important that at least four plaintiffs, and there are probably more, they challenged this because they had not been charged with any wrongdoing. They haven't been charged. They haven't been found guilty yet. The government wants to seize their safe deposit boxes. Now, U.S. District Judge R. Gary Klausner issued a temporary restraining order preventing the feds from doing this. Now, I've talked before about asset forfeiture, civil asset forfeiture, this whole idea that the government can seize your property without due process of law. Illegal, unconstitutional, yet it happens probably each and every day. But these people, at least these four, were smart enough to go and get help. They went to an Institute for Justice, and they are getting assistance. And right now, the judge is saying, no, you are ordered not to do this, because how do you seize stuff from a person you haven't proven has done anything wrong? See, this isn't forfeiture. This is theft. And the fact that the government thinks that maybe there was something illicit about it is not good enough. So I would ask you, wherever you are, go to your state and find out what their civil asset forfeiture laws are, their civil forfeiture laws, and then do something about it. Recognize the government cannot deprive you of your property without due process of law. They can't simply issue a seizure notice and take your stuff. That is theft, right? That's not simply a government taking. No, that is theft. And in this case, they're talking about seizing something on the order of $85 million in cash and prizes. That's grand theft. And we can't let our governments get away with it. And it's about time the American people start standing up and recognizing, hey, we have rights. You're not allowed to take my stuff without due process. And you can't, due process involves you proving I've done something wrong. That you've proven, not that you've accused, that you've proven that I have done something wrong. Think about it. If the government can merely seize material, seize stuff from you because they say so, that's not a free republic. That's not even simply a tyranny. That is a despotic tyranny. That is no different than a ruler coming in and saying, that's mine now. Whether it's Venezuela taking over the oil fields, or Stalin taking property from private owners, or Mao taking property of private citizens. That's the type of tactics we're talking about. And this is happening today. And while this case deals with the federal government, it happens in the states as well. I've talked about that in certain other episodes, other instances with states either trying to rein in these civil asset forfeiture laws because they are so hideous to liberty. They are so offensive to liberty and should not be stood for. I mean, it should be, if the people are going to get all bent out of shape, if the people in Loudoun County, Virginia are going to get all bent out of shape about their children being taught to be racist, why are the people in the states not all bent out of shape that their property is being taken, being stolen by governments at all level? Recognize you have a right to your property, and you also have a right to protect your property. Now, I got another Supreme Court case. Of course, this is silly season for the Supreme Court, but it deals with another aspect of property, one that the court has gotten wrong many, 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 many times before. And I'm probably going to go into this case a lot more detail in a future episode, but I want you to see what they've done. In a 5-4 decision, the federal Supreme Court decided that the federal power of eminent domain, what we talk about, the takings in the Fifth Amendment, that the federal power of eminent domain can be used to seize land for a private company. Now, I want you to let that sink in for just a moment. The federal government is saying that they have, because remember, the Supreme Court is part of the federal government, says that they have the right to simply take land and turn it over to a private entity. Now, this has an interesting twist. You see, Penn East is trying to build a pipeline. Nothing wrong with that. But the problem is they want to run that pipeline through state-owned land, as well as land protected by state law, and going through both New Jersey and Pennsylvania. So they wanted to use the federal eminent domain to take over state land. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment, it says, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Now, that brings up two very important points in this case. First of all, this was not, well, at least not all of it, was private property. Penn East wants to seize state-owned property. That is not private property. Therefore, the federal government does not have the authority to take public property. Period. End of story. Right? The Fifth Amendment says private property, not public property. Now, when it comes to protected lands, those may be, that may be private property. But they're not talking about taking this private property for public use. They're talking about taking it for private use. This is not the first time this has happened. How many of you remember the case of Kelo versus the City of New London, where the Supreme Court, once again, said that the city had the authority to not only condemn, but to steal the property of Suzette Kelo to turn it over to, I believe it was Bayer Aspirin? I believe it was Bayer Pharmaceutical Company. This is evil. This is another reason why you cannot trust the courts. This is this court saying that the language of the Constitution doesn't really matter. Yes, it says private property, but we think it means public property as well. Yes, it says public use, but we think that means public benefit, so we can give it to a private company because we think it'll benefit the public. I hate to tell you this, folks, but this is a type of nonsense that led some of our founding fathers to sign a document called the Declaration of Independence. One of the grievances there was he has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our constitutions and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. That's what this is. This is the Supreme Court combining with other parts of the government, expanding jurisdictions foreign to our constitution, unacknowledged by our laws, simply making it up as they go along. This is, I don't know, this is disgusting. Even more disgusting, you know, we're always talking about the court and Republican appointees versus Democrat appointees. Well, guess what? Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Alito, and Justice Kavanaugh, all three of them appointed by Republicans, voted to steal land from the states of New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Now, the fact that Breyer and Sotomayor did this as well, not a surprise. But three Republican-appointed justices voted to steal public land. It's why it doesn't matter who appointed them. What these men and women have done is evil. It is theft. They have put their marker saying, yes, we approve of theft. I don't care why they thought it was a good idea. It doesn't say so in the Constitution. Therefore, it is theft. And I got one more Supreme Court opinion to talk about. Now, most of these opinions I'll go into more depth later. I don't have time to do it here, but it fits the idea of understanding property. See, the Supreme Court declined to do anything. In this case, actually vacate a stay, be with the CDC's eviction moratorium. Now, for those not familiar, the Centers for Disease Control, not a lawmaking body, not a legitimate agency of the federal government, a violation of the Constitution, they issued a moratorium on evicting tenants who did not pay their rent. Now, here's what I find interesting. In the decision in this case, do not vacate the stay, the justice wrote, I agree with the district court and the appellants that the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention exceeded its existing statutory authority by issuing a nationwide eviction moratorium. Because the CDC plans to end the moratorium in only a few weeks on July 31st, and because those few weeks will allow for additional and more orderly distribution of the congressionally appropriated rental assistance funds, I vote at this time to deny the application to vacate the district court's stay of its order. In other words, well, they're only going to be depriving you of your property for a few more weeks, so we'll just let it stand. That is the Supreme Court of the United States. That's their words. Yes, it's wrong. They have exceeded their statutory authority. I'd say they exceed their constitutional authority. But because it's only for a few more weeks, and there'll be time for other programs to help pick up the slack, well, we'll let it stand. That is an abdication of your duty. That is an abdication of the duty of the court to apply the law, not to interpret the law, not to make up the law, not to decide when or if it should be applied, but to simply offer an opinion on the law. And here they said what they did was what the CDC has done is wrong, but we refuse to do anything about it. So every one of you landlords, you have had your property stolen because you've been removed control. You've been regulated out of evicting people in violation of the Constitution of the United States, in many cases in violation of the constitutions of your state. Not only should the court have overturned that stay, removed that stay, the court should have suggested that the U.S. District Attorney Office investigate the CDC for this gross violation of the rights of the American people. It's not simply an eviction moratorium. It's a deprivation of property. If you cannot control the property you own, you don't own it. So let me ask you, ladies and gentlemen, do you really trust the court's got your back? That they're going to protect your rights? Do you trust the federal government is going to protect your rights? It is more important than ever that we understand our rights, including our right to property, and that we learn how to defend it and we learn how to assert it. That is what I'm doing this summer. This August, I'm doing my Knowing Your Rights tour. I am traveling the country, helping people recognize their rights, and I'm teaching a lot about property rights, about understanding the property you have, not just in the stuff you own, but in the stuff you control, in your businesses, in your bodies, in your thoughts, in your rights to do what that are protected by the Constitution. You have a property in your rights. Now, if you want to find out more, please head to constitutionstudy.com/tour. You'll find out more about the tour, and you'll find out where I'm already booked. But if I'm not coming to you, well, then head to the bottom of the page and fill out that form, and I'll see if I can. If we can set up something that can get me to where you are, to meet a group of people, to first talk about and learn and understand our rights and how we can defend and assert them, and then take some time to answer questions and have an open and honest discussion about the Constitution, the rights, and also the responsibilities we have as citizens, citizens of our states, as well as citizens of the United States. And I'm doing this for free. I'm not asking a fee for anything. Most of the locations have been very generous. They have offered to put me up in a hotel, but I'm not charging a dime for any of this. I will accept donations. I'll be selling my books, but I'm doing this because our rights are so in jeopardy that I think the American people need a little more information to help them understand just what is at stake when we sit back and we allow government to ignore the rule of law, to ignore the consent of the people, to go from a government of the people, by the people, for the people, to a government that rules over the people. We need to understand it. And we are not powerless. Many people, I believe, think they're powerless against it. We are not. We are the masters of government, not its servants. It's about time. If we want to have freedom and liberty in this country, it's about time we start acting that way. So again, constitutionstudy.com/tour. For more information about the tour, you just go to constitutionstudy.com and find out all the work that I'm doing. You can find the video and the article that I wrote that I used at the beginning of this episode. You'll also find that on americaoutloud.com. These are all tools for you to understand and to share with others, to use to help us protect our rights. Because if we don't protect our rights, who will? If you're sitting around waiting for someone to protect your rights, oh, the courts will protect your rights. Well, we just showed that doesn't work. Oh, the president will protect our rights. Well, we've shown that doesn't work. Oh, the states will protect our rights. Oh, no, we've shown that doesn't work. Who's going to protect your rights? It's not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. But we can all do it. I think that's probably the most important thing. As depressing as stories like these have been, ultimately, we can fix this. We can fix this by our actions. We can fight for our liberty today when we can still do it at the ballot box before we're forced to resort to protecting them and fighting for them on the battlefield. So you can find out more about this program and all the great programs on America Out Loud. Head to americaoutloud.com. Search for under our shows or under schedule. You'll find the Constitution Study. And again, many great programs. You can also find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, and iHeart. The podcasts come out generally a few days after broadcast. And do me a favor, head over to Apple Podcasts. Give me a rating and review if you would, please.
Paid the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.